Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Carrie.
And I'm Kara. And today's book is Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey.
One. All right. Two. Green lights.
Green lights.
This motherfucker really was affected by his Lincoln commercials. Why is the title of his book Green Lights? I know you're going to tell me. I feel like I have 1,000 questions about this experience.
The thing is, I read this book and I don't even know if I could tell you why he calls them that. He explains it in his very roundabout way.
Matthew McConaughey is a riddle wrapped inside an enigma, wrapped inside an old leathery southern man.
This says, green lights mean go, advance, carry on, continue. On the road, they are set up to give the flow of traffic the right of way, and when scheduled properly, more vehicles catch more green lights in succession. They say, proceed. So he just talks about how it's getting the green light, basically. It's about timing. It's about luck. It's about, you know, living your life in a way so that, like, good things line up for you. This is a book about how to catch more yeses in a world of no's and how to recognize when a no might actually be a yes.
I love that he thinks it's a self-help book.
He really does.
Who is he going to help? If you aren't born hot.
That's the thing, too, is that, like, he almost gets there. He almost realizes that, like, he's supremely lucky. And he does say that.
But he still thinks he has something to teach.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, acknowledge that it's because he happens to be very conventionally attractive or he happens to be a cis white man. Like, he doesn't acknowledge the fact that he literally describes multiple occasions where he walked onto a set or to an audition and they are, like, having him read for, like, the supporting character. And he's like, no, I want to read for this character. And he does, and he books the job.
Wow.
Which, I mean, one, go off. That's awesome. But two, like, there are so many structural things in place that make him comfortable to be able to go into a room with that level of confidence.
I said this right before we started recording, but to me, Matthew McConaughey is dumb smart.
Yeah.
So, like, he makes smart choices, but only because there are, like, parts of his brain that don't work the way another human's would. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love a brain scan because I bet there are just dead parts up there, just like things floating around doing nothing. And you know what? His brain has adapted. It has figured it out, and he is able to have a very successful life. So, like, he doesn't need me to worry about his brain chemistry, but I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, it's, you know how, maybe this isn't a universal experience, so stop me if you haven't experienced this, but, like, you know how when you are at a bar with some friends in the before times,
yeah,
and you go up to the bar to, like, get a round of drinks for the table.
She got money.
You know,
no, it's okay. Kara's rich. Keep going.
No, like, you're like, hey, what do you want? And you just, like, you know, and then everybody Venmo's
again, you're rich. It's okay.
Shut the fuck up.
1% over here.
So you're at the bar waiting for the bartender to come to you. And this, like, grizzly dude who's, like, not unattractive, but, like, isn't the kind of person that who would make me a lesbian. Double take.
Yeah.
Starts just, like, talking and saying things, and, like, they seem cool. This metaphor is, I'm losing it.
No, but, like, I love this.
They seem chill on the surface, and you're, like, kind of vibing, and you're like, yeah, totally. Like, I totally feel that, man. Like, yeah, I know. That's just how it is. And, like, you're kind of drunk, so, like, you're just kind of saying whatever and agreeing with them.
Uh-huh.
And then they say something that's like, and you're like, oh, you're actually a little cuckoo bananas. That's what reading this book was like.
Okay. I think it's a fairly universal metaphor. I don't talk to strangers at bars.
I mean, not, like, on purpose.
I, like, in any situation, okay, this is peak white woman of me, but I assume that any man that talks to me at a bar is going to sexually assault me.
Like, fair. That's fair.
I don't think it is.
I think I lived down south for too long that I just assume good intentions from a lot of people.
I also, like, not Oh, everything I was just going to say is so deeply offensive that, you know what? I'm not going to say it. But okay. I don't think that every man is trying to assault me. But in that moment, I always do. I'm so sure. scared of strangers. I hate human interaction.
Aren't you so glad that you live in a city with 8 million people?
I live in an apartment with 2 people, and I plan to keep it that way. Quar has been relatively good to me. I am thriving in an environment where I don't speak to strangers.
Just the guy when you pick up your Dunkin' order.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The only people I speak to are people I have known for years and various members of the Dunkin' Donuts staff. Some of whom I have known for years.
There you go.
All right, Kara, I don't want to wait for our lives to be over a la Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, I want to know as much about this book as humanly possible.
Great.
So can you tell me and our listeners everything that you can about the book Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey in 60 seconds. Your time starts now.
Green Lights is set up as sort of a scrapbook / journal of his first 50 years in life. It talks about his childhood in Texas from a tumultuous but loving household, the switch that he made from law school to film school when he was in college, his cis white maleness getting him work in Hollywood almost immediately, his rise to fame and how it affected the sort of traveling lone wolf lifestyle that he wanted to live, various journeys that he took across the U.S. in his Airstream, and also in some international journeys that he took to the Amazon and to Africa to search for truth and some other things, all because of dreams he had. It's insane. Meeting his wife and starting a family, the McConaissance, how he continues to grow and change, and lots of other woo-woo, hippy-dippy bumper sticker shit.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. That was well under 60 seconds. I have so many things I want to talk about. Of course he owns an Airstream, first mm-hmm. of all. Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense. I hate him. I think I'm gonna
why do you hate that he has an Airstream? Unpack that for me.
I don't know. I
like, is it the desired like traveling lifestyle that you take offense to?
Yeah, I think it's like, maybe it's just that Airstream right now is like a very Instagram subculture of like, here's what I don't want. I don't want a picture of someone in a, God, this is a terrible sentence. Okay. I don't want a visual representation of with someone like some mountains behind them or something, talking about what like a beautiful, varied country this is. Like, the majesty of the 48 states it doesn't work for me.
Doesn't do it for you. Is it the patriotism angle that you take issue with?
I think there is something partially like kind of inherently patriotic about like finding beauty in all of these places across the country.
Really?
Which is
Really?
As I'm saying this, like, why am I so disgusted by that?
Because I will be the first person to be like, fuck this stupid country. But I think about some of the things that I've seen, like visually, mm-hmm. like some of the nature things that I've seen, and I like lose my mind.
So I actually like would completely agree with this. I last summer like drove along the Pacific Coastal Highway and then like cut across parts of California. And I was like, this is a John Steinbeck novel. Like mm-hmm. this, I see it. I get it. And I think the problem is that like, I am wowed by that.
By nature? I get it. But also, I want you to separate.
Sound absurd right now. Okay.
No, you don't. You don't. You're valid.
No. You have validated me for 11 and a half years at this point. It's okay if there's one thing in that time that confuses you about me.
What?
You are very nice to me, Kara. It's kind of your thing. I know. Cruel and you're a kind person. That's how this works. Except for right now. You're not even being cruel. You're literally just questioning me.
Maybe I'm taking such umbrage with this because in many ways that is the life that I wish I had.
Okay. Straight white cis man doing that versus you, my lesbian queen, doing that. Like, already 10 times better with you doing that.
Sure.
No, I don't know. This is absurd. This is absurd that that bothers me. So I just...
No, I mean, I think I get it.
I don't even know that I get it. I just have like a visceral reaction to that. I have a visceral reaction to him trying to find truth.
Okay, well, that's... Yeah.
But I think they're connected. It's like this... The entire, like... Going full English teacher for a moment. But the entire... conflict genre that is man versus nature is not for me. I'm also like, I'm not an outdoorsy person. That's true. I will appreciate, like, I personally enjoy a vista from my car, which why then wouldn't I like an Airstream? Because you have a built-in comforter. I don't know what this is. I don't know where this is coming from. I will unpack it in my own therapy, not on this podcast at some point, and report back.
It's all good.
But here's what I really want to talk about. So those are the things that the truth and the Airstream bother me.
Mm-hmm.
What bothers me maybe most of all is that he got accepted into a law school. This is how you know that the whole education system is a joke.
It's fucked.
Like, I don't know. Maybe he was intelligent. There are a great many people who think they want to be a lawyer and then realize how much work it is and change their plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Matthew McConaughey just was going to be a lawyer. He was really going to be, what's that movie? That movie that he was in later where he...
It was like the movie that made him famous. I read this book, I promise.
I believe you. The Lincoln Lawyer. No, that's the newer one. He was also in A Time to Kill. He did...
Yes, A Time to Kill. Yeah, that was like the movie that like made him famous. He talks about how he was in Santa Monica that day, like the day that it came out, just like going about his life as he had been doing for the few years that he'd lived in LA previously to this. And suddenly that day he like went into a Quiznos and like ordered food and everyone was staring at him. And he was like, oh, I'm like famous now. Like there's a clear delineation between like what I could do previously and what I can't do anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love that. Love that journey for him.
Okay. I'm fact checking myself. He was in undergrad and was applying to law schools.
Oh, okay.
And then...
You know what? Either way, it's fine. The fact that he was like, yeah, I'm going to be a lawyer. I can't... I'm gonna work on my Matthew McConaughey accent in this episode.
Well, he talks about... So one of the things that he talks about is his dad... The cognitive dissonance between the life he describes growing up and like... On paper, how it's described sounds like kind of traumatic and very turbulent.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about it as if it was like the best thing ever. Like he literally in the first chapter of this describes him being like 8 years old and watching his parents scream at each other, a fight that escalated to like physical violence with them like throwing plates at each other and then suddenly starting to make out and have sex.
In front of him?
Yes. He describes seeing this at 8 years old.
But
he said he describes it in such a way that is like, and that was pretty dope.
Wow. Like,
and that's wow. How my parents loved each other.
Wow. Who's his wife?
Her name is Camila Alves. He met her in a bar and went up to her and was like, would you like to come have a drink with me? And she was like, I guess. And so, yeah, she was just like a pretty lady he saw in a bar.
Okay.
Yeah, she's like a normie.
Love that. Matthew McConaughey, what am I feeling? Why do I have all these unprocessed feelings about Matthew McConaughey that are really split between like, am I disgusted with Matthew McConaughey? And like, or is he like a sweet baby angel that I just want to like swaddle?
Okay, that's kind of, I can't remember if I said this on or off mic, but like the cognitive dissonance of sort of these two halves of who he is was really interesting to me reading this because like in a lot of ways, he's this like hippy dippy, live off the land, like Texas boy who just like wants to vibe and like smoke weed in the desert and like.
Sure. And search for some truth. Yeah.
Yeah. Literally like him and his dog just like driving around the country in a trailer is like the dream.
See, and it makes me like roll my eyes into the back of my skull when you said like, no, just make your fucking movies. Don't go driving in the desert. Why does that bother me? What is this? What is happening?
Well, okay. So there's that version of him. And then there's also the version of him that says things like looking up to his very clearly like
abusive,
misogynistic father. And like some of the views that he has that like, you know, his intentions are good, but like the ideology behind them is like, for lack of a better word, problematic.
Yeah.
But like he expresses them in a way that like, you know, his intentions are good.
There's like warmth behind them. But yes, it doesn't change that. Like, that's like story of so many people's lives, or like you're upholding sort of like, what is the word? I'm also looking for a different word than problematic, but you're holding up problematic structures and are participating in things that are marginalizing or harming. You're participating in something that is causing harm.
Yeah.
But you have the very best of intentions. And for the most part, like as a society, we all let that go. But
for sure. And maybe that's why I'm struggling. Maybe that's why you and I are both struggling with this so much, is because he is sort of this like pre-internet, pre-contemporary celebrity. He sort of like breaks a lot of these traditional molds that we, not that we try to like enforce or whatever, but like it's easier for your brain to like categorize someone as like, you know, to be like Demi Moore is like a movie star.
Yes. Or
to be like, this person is this. And to ascribe all of these things to them. Whereas like, he is one of those people, one of these people who seems like some of his life is like a little from column A, a little from column B, a little from column C.
I don't know. He's such an enigma. He is just kind of doing his own weird thing. And all the time we give ourselves permission to like, not like things that celebrities are doing. Why does he feel polarizing to me? I don't even think I have been looking forward to this one all week. Like I have been amped about it.
And now that we're here, you're like feeling all these weird things.
I have weird feelings about it. I don't even know. Maybe I'll understand it by the end.
Let's backtrack and examine your about the author.
What a segue.
Thank you. It's like we do this or something.
Oh my God. Top five segues of all time. That one.
How do you know Matthew McConaughey? How are you familiar with him?
So I think my first exposure to Matthew McConaughey must have been The Wedding Planner. It is a seminal text. It is my favorite of the B-movie rom-coms. At one point, maybe on this pod, maybe somewhere else, I will give a definitive list and ranking of where rom-coms are. That day is not today, but there are definitely tiers. And in the B-movie rom-coms, Matthew McConaughey is the most frequent lead of a B-movie rom-com. But the greatest one is The Wedding Planner. It's near perfect. I mean, near perfect. The script is still not good. It's still a B. It's a B-level rom-com. But it's doing what it has to do. Mm-hmm. I've seen Dazed and Confused several times. It's not my movie. I know it is an important movie to a lot of people. A Richard Linklater joint is not for me. I think they are well-crafted movies. I am not yearning for a film that captivates the particular experiences that Richard Linklater is trying to capture.
I feel that. I totally feel that. You're like, I get what this is trying to be, and it's being it well, but it's not something that's speaking.
It doesn't speak to me. And we all know that you don't have to only consume art that like speaks to you personally.
Of course.
So I can appreciate that it works and that it is like a valid form of art. There's always like a nostalgia component that not actively rubs me the wrong way, but definitely has something there of like, why do you want to get back to this? Yes. Why are you trying to capture this feeling?
That's how I feel about all, well, say it, you know, I hate nostalgia, but like, that's how I feel about in the last 5 years, all of these, as in the last 5 years that have occurred, not the musical, the last 5 years.
Not by Jason the musical around. Or film.
Or film, right?
Yeah.
Damn, forgot that happened.
I wish I could forget.
Within the last 5 years of human history, there's been this huge like influx of like stuff set in the 80s.
Yes.
Because everyone who is getting greenlit for projects right now, green lights, are all people, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s, who were kids during that time. So yeah. You have Stranger Things and you have that's the one example that's coming to my mind right now.
No, there is a lot of like 80s adjacent culture. And it's, why do you want to go back in time to this moment? And yeah. And the people that want that, I don't know. It's just, I think we need to examine, why do you have this urge to recreate a moment so much? Yeah. And like everybody has them in different ways, but I just, it's interesting when you are doing a period piece and one of the major feelings you're trying to evoke is nostalgia. And I don't even think that like Richard Linklater, this pod is wild right now. I don't even think that Richard Linklater is insisting that it's so much better, but he imbues it with such warmth.
Loving this.
Such a yeah. feeling of there's love there that it's like,
you want that.
I know people are watching it and getting that feeling of nostalgia in a way that like, I don't know that you need it.
Is like lame.
Yeah. Agreed. Lame. Okay. So other things I've seen Matthew, I have of course observed all of his rom-coms. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days could be argued for a high ranking place. The film failure to launch is doing something. And we as a society should be talking about it more.
Really?
So here's why. The idea of a man living in his parents' home and using it to avoid commitment is interesting. Like, the concept is great. The decision to cast Sarah Jessica Parker as the woman who would make a man move out of his house because he wanted to be a man and grow up for her. We should also deconstruct the phrase, be a man. But Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew McConaughey, her, that's her real her energy. Real, that's what's going to get you out of the house. That's what's going to make you leave Terry Bradshaw's home. I don't think so. I'd pick Terry Bradshaw over SJP any day of the week.
Because it's like, once again, the protagonist in Sex and the City, Carrie is the least interesting of all of them.
Agreed.
So like the protagonist is sort of like the everyman, for lack of a better word. And everyman is not gendered. It's just a term.
It's just a term. You're fine. We're moving past it.
You're right. But yes, agreed. Sarah Jessica Parker is uninteresting. No offense, SJP.
Here's the thing. Based on...
You're uninteresting. No offense.
No, do not take offense to this, but you are bland and boring and we kind of hate you, but no offense.
No ghost.
I think Sarah Jessica Parker seems like a lovely person.
She's married to Matthew Broderick, so she must be pretty great.
That is not a point in her favor for me, but...
Wait, do you not like Matthew Broderick?
Yeah. I don't get Matthew Broderick at all. What? I don't get it.
What?
I don't sure get king, it.
King Matthew
all.
Broderick?
He's not my king. He's a jester.
Short jester.
He's a short little jester of a man. No, Matthew Broderick is not it for me.
What?
No. I've got nothing for Matthew Broderick.
We've had this discussion before, I feel like, and yet every time it shakes me to my core because I love him so much.
For what?
He's just like, I like want to put him in my pocket, and he's like fun, and he would like sing and dance.
I want to flick him off a table. That's a short king, short little jester, man.
Did you know that he was involved in a hit and run?
What?
Yeah, look on his Wikipedia page.
Oh my God.
It was like not that long ago.
So... my feelings on Matthew McConaughey, who this episode is about.
We're really off the rails.
Oh, my God. But, okay, and he is doing some of his best work. If we want to talk about his McConaissance, we actually need to be talking about Magic Mike.
You do love Magic Mike.
Yeah, I'm
not saying that derogatorily. I'm saying that's a fact.
Honestly, Magic Mike XXL is better, for those of you who need to know. Magic Mike is too much of a Soderbergh movie. And it was not, it was marketed like porn you can see in the theater. And then yes. You got there and it was a one man's journey to like get out of a toxic stripping environment. Excuse yeah. me. Absolutely not. That's not what I'm interested in.
You just wanted the male mods.
Important story that I do think I've told Kara off the air before, but needs to be on the pod. I saw Magic Mike in theaters the weekend it opened. I am not like, I was going to say, I'm not like a particularly horny person. That's a total lie.
That's a lie.
I'm like, I'm horned up all the time. I have been talking about people that I have found attractive since such a young age, like an unhealthy age. The way my parents had to get comfortable with me talking about men that I were interested in, they just had to deal with it, and they've coped, and it's fine. But I wasn't particularly like, I have to see Magic Mike the night it opened.
It just ended up happening.
It just ended up happening. We needed a thing to do on a Friday night. I went with one of my best friends, who is a lesbian, and she was not out at the time, but we went to go see this movie, and it was filled with women about 15 years older than us. And when it started, people started yelling back to the screen, including women yelling, "Yummy." And we knew we had made a mistake.
Oh no, not
we had made the wrong choice. But yeah, it was, what a time. Yeah, so Matthew McConaughey's performance in Magic Mike is like actually very good. He's kind of scary. He has like an evil striptease number.
Because he's sort of like the pimp, right? He's like in charge of the whole operation.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen
it. Yeah, me too. But his body is so much older than the other ones. And so there's him stripping and dancing, and it's like, it isn't sexy. It's kind of scary. And I think that that's an interesting choice.
It's like menacing.
Yes. It's a menacing strip.
Were you afraid that he was going to sexually assault you?
I felt safe with the barrier of the screen and the fact that it was a filmed feature. But honestly, if I saw Matthew McConaughey dressed like Dallas from Magic Mike, I would assume he was going to sexually assault me and I would leave the bar.
That's, I think, a fair assessment to make.
Kara, what do you know about Matthew McConaughey?
I think his early work sort of falls into my cultural void a little bit.
Sure.
But things that I retroactively became aware of, you know, like his rom-coms such as The Wedding Planner, Failure to Launch, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Those were sort of, I think, what he was known for. I've never seen Dazed and Confused. For a long time, I confused it with Clueless.
Wow. Okay. Very different energy.
Yes. Yes. But people always mentioned them in the same sentence as like things that came out like before we were really watching stuff like that, but like that you just had to see.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? For
they
sure.
They're always like mentioned in the same sentences to me.
Wow. Okay.
Which is weird because they're, again, very different vibes, but.
Very different vibes. One I'm way more into than the other.
Yeah. And then I guess during the McConaissance, a term which it must be pointed out, he coined himself.
What?
And talks about it in this book.
Of course he did. What a ride he's taking me on. I don't even know how I feel about that.
I know. Part of me is like, you go. And another part of me is like, gross.
It's like that post that was like, if Walter White was a woman, he would be a girl boss. A thing you have been texting me about for days now.
I can't stop thinking about it.
I think what is happening with me and Matthew McConaughey is you'll start a sentence and I'll start out groaning, but by the end of it, I'm smiling. Like, I think that's the trajectory it's taking. It's like, at first I'm annoyed. And by the end, I'm like, oh, Matthew McConaughey, you do you, you little weirdo.
Is that his? I think that's his vibe. That vibe of like, ugh, this fucking guy. And then he like wins you over and you're like, oh, which in general is the kind of person I hate because I hate being proven wrong. But he seems nice. In the McConaissance, I'm more familiar with some of those pieces of work since I was an adult when that was happening. So I sort of watched True Detective. What I really watched was the season that Rachel McAdams was in.
She's on True Detective?
She is. Yeah. She's like the main character in season 2. Because you know how it's like anthological?
Yeah.
So she's like the Matthew McConaughey character in season 2.
Wow.
Okay. Interesting things going on there. Again, I still don't think it's like a good show, but I mean, it's like fine. It's totally fine. It was like at the beginning of like HBO just like jerking us all off. So
yeah. Classic HBO jerking us all off.
Classic HBO circle jerk. And so True Detective, and then also Dallas Buyers Club, which I saw on a date, actually. One of the last dates I went on with a guy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I like Dallas Buyers Club. I think he's great in it.
I do too.
It's not like a movie I ever rewatch.
Revisit. Yeah.
Saw it once, saw a great performance. He deserved an award for it. But my problem with the Academy is that, like, he probably deserved an award before that. He is giving you something different in that. But he was a charismatic romantic lead for years.
And no one cares about romantic comedies.
Yeah, I would even argue, okay, I know what I said about The Wedding Planner, but How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is a very good movie for the performances.
Yeah.
Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey are performing. They're giving you a lot. And mm-hmm. there's something that I think is very fun about that. It's an interesting little movie. It's not my favorite, but...
Do you know, like, vibe-wise between those two leads, what their chemistry reminds me of?
Tell me.
It reminds me of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn in Overboard.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There's something very similar there.
Which, look at that.
Yeah, I could have really pulled for them as a real life couple, I think.
Mm-hmm. Does Kate Hudson have a book?
If not, she will soon. It'll be all about her leggings, probably. Kate Hudson loves leggings.
So, Carrie, it's time to play a game.
Let's go.
Let's play Guess That Chapter. Alrighty, so Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights, is 298 pages, a lot of which have pictures on them.
Yeah, that tracks.
But still, we don't have time to cover the entire thing. So instead, we pick one iconic chapter that stood out the most, which means we're going to play Guess That Chapter.
Let's fucking go.
So I'm going to tell you some characters and not a setting because I forgot to put a setting.
Classic us.
And see if you can tell me what you think this is about. You probably will be able to.
Yes.
Okay, your characters are Matthew McConaughey.
Cool.
Richard Linklater. Marissa Ribisi. And mom and pop McConaughey, his parents.
Who the fuck is Melissa Ribisi? Is she related to Giovanni Ribisi?
Maybe.
Okay. So it's obviously going to be about booking Dazed and Confused. And I assume if it involves all these people, it must be like, was this to me, Dazed and Confused feels like his first project. Kara's nodding. So I think I'm ready. Wow. Okay. I'm excited to go on this ride. I wish I had almost saved my Richard Linklater rant for later, but it's okay. Let's go on this ride. Take me through Dazed and Confused.
Great.
And the origin of All Right, All Right, All Right.
Yes. That's okay. Literally. That is what this is about.
Of course it is. Of course it is. What a fucking weird dude.
So unfortunately, or maybe not surprisingly at all, this book is not full of a lot of salacious Hollywood stories, which I was kind of hoping for someone who's been on our screens for a better part of three decades, but he seems to gloss over the things he thinks we'll want to hear. And he instead focuses on these sort of like introspective stories about his life. But one very specific story that he does tell about a Hollywood thing is his experience on Dazed and Confused, and more specifically, how he came up with All Right, All Right, All Right.
Okay. Can I then do, this is a quick mini game of asking things that he talks about in his book before we continue our regular game.
Absolutely.
Does he discuss The Wedding Planner and or J-Lo at all?
There's like a paragraph about it because it was the first of his like run of rom-coms that he
did.
Yes,
it is.
He talks about how it was like, he doesn't belittle it at all, but he is like, it was easy. It was fun. I enjoyed going to work every day. It paid the bills. It was fine.
Again, that just sounds so appealing. This is why rom-coms are great. People are happy while they're making them. It's an enjoyable work environment, but fancy art and awards tells you that you need to be doing something that's more difficult? Absolutely not. We should all just be enjoying ourselves and making romantic comedies every day.
Agreed.
Fuck you, Alison Brie.
Fuck you, Alison Brie.
That's what it always comes back to. Okay. Does he talk about the Lincoln commercials?
Yes. In a similarly like glossed over thing. He does talk about how he wrote some of the copy for them.
That does not surprise me in the least.
They sort of just like put him in a car and like let him say his bullshit and then sort of like shaped it, but like
just truly brilliant brand work by Lincoln. Like, Lincoln, you deserve everything you got because someone was just like, put Matthew McConaughey in a car and let him speak. Great, great work. Mm-hmm. Does he talk about Magic Mike?
The fact that I am looking in the book to remember
indicates that that's unlikely.
Oh, nope. Having recently done Magic Mike, I was in excellent physical shape.
Wow. Okay. What a ride.
Is the sentence where he mentions Magic Mike.
And final question. Did you think this book was good?
I mean, define good. Like,
great. That's all I need to know. Take me through this chapter now.
I will. So he's filming Dazed and Confused, which you are right, is his first big project. And he's describing getting into character and figuring out who this guy was. I don't know why this surprised me so much, but like, he talks about his approach to acting in a very intelligent way. And I, you know, I see you rolling your eyes.
I am, but that's, it's not even the intelligent way. It's the approach to acting.
Oh, but that's the thing. Like, he's doing it in a way that's like very basic, but he's like not pretentious about it, but he like great. Describes it in a way that's very simple. That's, who is this person? What do they want? What are they like? What do they want out of this scene? What do they want out of life? Like, very basic.
Great.
And so his character in Dazed and Confused, Wooderson, is very much, I would say, similar to him in real life. Just like a very go with the flow, like chill vibe dude. So he understood him very well. They're on set and he didn't have any scripted lines in this scene, but he was like talking to Richard Linklater, and Richard Linklater was like, hey, come here. Like, I think for this thing, I know we weren't scheduled to like have you on camera other than just like to be in the background, but like, I think we want you to like pull into this shot and like say something to Marissa Ribisi. And he was like, oh, okay, sure. And he was like, so can you like go like think of something, like some quippy little thing to say, and we'll just like catch it as you pull into the shot or whatever. And he was like, sure. So he's like sitting there thinking, he's like, okay, what is this guy like? Who is this guy? And he's like, he likes his car. He likes getting high. He likes rock and roll. So he pulls into the spot and he's like, I have all three of those things. So he pulls into the shot and he goes, all right, all right, all right. And that's how it was born.
Wow.
From an improv line in a scene that he was not even supposed to be in.
Well, you know what? It does make me feel better that it's an improv line, because there is something strange about making your catchphrase a line that someone else wrote for you in a movie. So at least it's genuinely his. Like, there's that.
That's true.
That's a... Yeah. Why do I have such weird feelings about Matthew McConaughey? What is this?
I'm really watching you go through it. It's an interesting experience.
I'm in a tumultuous place emotionally over Matthew McConaughey.
You are right now. I'm watching it happen.
You know what? I think I'm rooting for him. I started the morning rooting for him. His Airstream threw me off, but I think I'm back on board. I'm on board with Mr. McConaughey. How do his parents factor into this story?
So that's the sort of caveat at the end of this chapter, is that 5 days into filming Dazed and Confused, he got word that his dad had passed away.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And he's the youngest of three kids. And so his dad is like, or three boys. So his dad was like his hero or whatever.
Sure. Because gender dictates that you must
idolize.
Your hero must be the family member with the same sex organs as you. That's how that works.
Yes. He describes how when he was a kid, his dad would always be like, oh, I'm not going to die. And when I finally do, I'm going to go out doing your mom. Like, in a very like good old boy. Like, that's what he would tell his kids, is that like, when I die, I'm going to be doing your mom. And Carrie,
what?
That's how his dad died.
Shut the fuck up. His dad did not die while fucking his mother.
Uh-huh.
And Matthew McConaughey thought that this was a good thing to include. He thought, well, honestly, he has a good understanding of his father, because it does honor his dad's legacy if he's the type of man that said that, to
include it in his book.
Yes, to share that with the world.
The comfortability with which he talks about his parents' sex life is what I just find fascinating.
Again, something that you and I can never relate to.
Yeah, he's just way too comfortable with it.
I remember 30 seconds ago when I said, I'm on board with Matthew McConaughey. I'm back in. What am I supposed to do with that? How? I was conflicted about Matthew McConaughey before I knew that? Before that information was shared with me?
Mm-hmm.
What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to process this? The years of therapy I'm going to need, not from reading Matthew McConaughey's book, but from hearing you tell me about Matthew McConaughey's book. We have to put like a warning on this episode. This is going to fuck people up. What can you imagine? I mean, no, you can't. Neither can I. And I don't really want to imagine. I cannot even comprehend a human parent saying to their human child, when I die, I will be fucking your mother. The only person I can imagine saying that is a teenage boy while in the middle of a fight with another teenage boy.
When I die, I'm fucking your mom. Incredible, honestly.
I don't think that anything has ever shaken me to my core. How soon after you read that sentence did you know that you were going to make this the chapter that we had to talk about?
Well, I was kind of waiting for like a salacious Hollywood story, but this is sort of like the most in-depth he gets about something that like happened on set.
Interesting.
Most of the rest of stuff is like the preparation for a project. Like he talks a lot about the prep for Dallas Buyers Club and how like him and Jean-Marc Vallée like worked really hard to make it happen. But like,
I forget that Jean-Marc Vallée did Dallas Buyers Club because to me, he ruined his career with Big Little Lies. Like
season one
is good. But like, I am the first person to talk about the legitimacy of television. And even like season one of Big Little Lies is great fun, but it's still kind of trashy.
Oh, it's sure. Just, I mean, that's how the book is.
Rooted in a good story.
Like, yes. The book is like elevated trashy beach read.
Which is what I like. Like, I am the first person to be like, this is a real genre. Like, I'm really glad that performers are doing more like kind of garbage projects, like, because it's not really garbage. It's just like, it's a silly story, and like,
yeah,
soap opera and camp are worthwhile things to perform. And I personally love them. But even as I say that, Jean-Marc Vallée made Dallas Buyers Club and then made Nicole Kidman with bangs in fucking Big Little Lies. Nicole Kidman has to get off our screens. Has to. She has to take a break.
Let her rest.
She hadn't worked for years, and now I see her once a week, every week.
But this is what I'm saying. Demi Moore needs to take her throne.
Demi, we have to write it.
Carrie, should we do some research about Matthew McConaughey?
Mama, let's research. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
Did you or a loved one see the video of the giant baby on Twitter? If so, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Email celebritybookpod@gmail.com to receive your free information packet.
Carrie, what did you look up during this time?
The first thing I looked up is a clip that I made you watch because after I saw it, someone else had to experience it. It's a clip from Red Table Talk in which Matthew McConaughey's mother describes her experience when her husband had a heart attack after climax. And she uses the phrase, "What's the matter, big boy? Did I wear you out?" before she realized he was dead, and then went to a neighbor for help. The other thing that I read that, Kara, I didn't tell you this part, was I found an article where apparently on Mark Maron's podcast, Matthew McConaughey shared that his mom refused to let medics cover her husband with a sheet because she wanted the neighbors to see his manhood on display.
See, that's the kind of shit that I'm talking about, of like, those are the kinds of people that raised him. And so those are the kinds of values that he has, even though he also has like woo-woo hippy-dippy values. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I've been taking a lot of time to process both the fact that his dad said regularly, "I'm going to die fucking your mom," and the fact that it actually occurred and that that information was shared and how that shapes him. And I've decided to be profoundly on Matthew McConaughey's team because I think there's no way you aren't affected by that. And I say that, and then I forgot that there's one other thing that I looked up when I was starting to do research for my 6 degrees, was that Matthew McConaughey recently appeared on Russell Brand's podcast, in which he criticized what he called the illiberal left, and saying that people shouldn't just expect Trump supporters to move on this quickly. So,
oh no.
And that headline apparently only came out an hour ago. So I I don't know what to do with Matthew McConaughey. No. He doesn't fit in any box. And I understand that people contain multitudes. And every time I think I'm all the way back on board with him, I feel confused. I feel conflicted. I don't know what to do with Matthew McConaughey.
How do we manifest a headline about a person every goddamn time we do one of these?
At least we didn't kill anybody this time.
That's true.
We murdered Alex Trebek, you guys.
1 hour ago? I hate my life.
I hate it too. But honestly, this one isn't, this is like 3 weeks away, this podcast. So it's fine.
That's true.
Hopefully it'll have passed.
Very true.
Carol, what did you research?
I also watched that clip that you made me watch. It was traumatizing.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
My favorite part about it is that like the way that it's edited. So obviously it's happening virtually, but the way that it's edited, one half of the screen is Jada and like the red table talk folks. And the other half is a split screen of Matthew McConaughey and his mom. So it's like Jada, Matthew, his mom. And he's just like sitting there sort of like nodding and like chuckling and listening to his mom tell the story.
The fact that he's right there while it happens is so...
It's that for me.
Deeply upsetting, but it clearly is what their family dynamic is. I guess at least it was a sex positive home.
Right. You know, that's the one good takeaway.
It also seems like it was a violence positive home. And it seems like I don't know what to do with all this information. If someone can succinctly tell me how I should feel about Matthew McConaughey, I would really like that, because I expected this to just be a light and fluffy episode, and instead I find myself more confused than normal.
Well, and see, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier, is that like he is a person who we can't really like put in a box.
Correct. He doesn't fit in one.
I think there are good things about that and there are bad things about that. And I think honestly, like in real life, most people can't be put into those boxes that we so easily put them into.
True.
Like, you know, people contain many more multitudes than they appear to.
And that is technically what the purpose of this memoir is for a lot of celebrities, is a chance to open the door to all the things that they haven't previously been able to share, and for them to provide context themselves on situations.
One of those things, which was his arrest in 1999, which we didn't even talk about.
Oh my God. I forgot that happened.
Yeah. He was high in his house and playing bongos at like 3 a.m. And so
classic
the police got
McConaughey.
Called. Right. The police got called because he was disturbing the peace, I guess.
It's 3 a.m. and there were bongos involved.
And they arrested him. And he, much like his father when he was dying, they like tried to give him a blanket to cover him up when they took him to the police station. And
oh, because he was naked?
Yeah. And he was like, no, I don't want a blanket, because they broke into my house. Like, I wasn't bothering anybody and they came into my house. So if I put on clothes, that makes it seem like I was like out and about doing stuff. But like, I was in my house naked and y'all bothered me. So like, I'm going to the police station naked.
He's so confusing to me. What is Matthew McConaughey doing? Why are they so...
At any given moment.
What is happening? You know what? Honestly, let him have his Airstream. He needs it. He needs to be naked in an Airstream in a desert somewhere, just living life. I've never been so confounded by a human being in my life, maybe. That seems extreme, but that's where I am right now. Right now.
A person that I haven't known personally. Yeah, yes. I think you're right.
I also think that because he, from what you're describing about this book, so many other celebrities use it as an opportunity to provide context, and he's not really doing that. He's just sort of like, all right, I got words on a page, baby.
Yes, that is exactly the vibe of this book. I think you summed it up pretty succinctly, Carrie.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm here.
Why don't you tell me your 6 degrees of Laura Bell Bundy?
Okay, I would love to do that. So we're starting with Matthew McConaughey in the film How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days also features as one of Kate Hudson's little friends, Annie Parise, is I think how you say her last name. Yeah, I see your face, Kara. Annie Parise, who is known to the five
literally
of us that watched
two of us.
I assume that there are some others who watch Friends from college, but mostly,
yeah,
mostly Kara and I are Friends from college's biggest stans, and Annie Parise stars in that. So she plays Sam, who is having an affair with Keegan-Michael Key, who plays Ethan, who Ethan is married to Lisa, who is played by Colby Smulders, who stars in How I Met Your Mother with Laura Bell Bundy. So I added a lot of steps in there, but it really just goes from Matthew McConaughey, Annie Parise, Colby Smulders, and our girl, Laura Bell Bundy.
That's good. Thank you. Mine is a little unconventional, but like still works. So Matthew McConaughey was in season one of True Detective.
Cool.
In season two of True Detective, even though they did not have any scenes together, it was the same show, so I'm counting it.
Same show, it counts.
In season two of True Detective was Rachel McAdams.
Great.
Rachel McAdams is in the film version of Mean Girls.
Yes.
Written by, and also stars in a small role, Tina Fey. Tina Fey wrote the book for Mean Girls, the musical, which had lyrics by Nell Benjamin. Nell Benjamin also wrote the lyrics for Legally Blonde, the musical, which starred Laura Bell Bundy.
Fantastic. I love it. I love that you took us on such a very journey to get there. Yeah. It was really fun. That was very good.
I was proud of that one. And I didn't really even have to look up that much.
The fact that Nell Benjamin is just a household name to you is great.
I was pretty pleased with that.
I'm pleased with it too. Very nice work.
Should Matthew McConaughey's life be franchised?
Absolutely not, is the answer. The answer is a hard no.
Your scientists are so busy thinking about whether or not they could that they didn't think about whether or not they should. So I wanted to ask, should we? And the answer is no.
The answer is no. And let's talk about why. He is doing just fine. Mm-hmm. He has an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
He has his Lincoln commercials.
Mm-hmm.
After reading that Russell Brand transcript situation article thing, I don't want to give a lot more credence to Matthew McConaughey's opinions on anything.
Same.
I think an interesting story that could be told out of this is a broken, complicated marriage seen through the eyes of a child that thinks it's good. That's like an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I don't want to see that at the same time. Like, I think it's like, oh, that's
it's an interesting story, but you have no desire to see it made.
Yeah.
I feel that.
I'm tired of domestic violence. Like, I am. But
yeah. Yeah.
And like, I get that those stories like provide exposure and do something and like maybe help point things in the right direction. But do I just want to see like healthy, well-adjusted marriages on television? Sure, probably. But like, I get that that's not particularly dramatic, but to go off on a Mindy Project rant, something that was so good about that show, and I know you've seen certain episodes and are working your way through it slowly, but the idea that once a couple gets together, there's still so much interesting story to be told in a relationship.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always have to be violent. I don't know if this is anything. Matthew McConaughey doesn't need to be franchised though. Like I just don't.
Bottom line.
There's no story he's giving me that I want to see in another form. And I trust that he will continue to use his voice and he will still be a part of my life for many years to come, whether it's a project I'm excited about or not.
That seems very true. Well, all right, all right, all right.
Which brings us to our final segment, Guess That Author. Every week, Kara and I guess that chapter, but now it's your turn, listeners, to try and guess the author that we'll be reading next week. I'm going to give you three clues about the book I'm reading next week, and it's your job to figure out if you can guess that author. Fam, fam. Tiny air horns only.
Tiny.
Clue number one, we have mentioned this person in a previous podcast. Clue number two, they are one half of an iconic comedy duo. Clue number three, I only recently discovered this person's work.
If you have a guess for next week's author, you can find us at Celeb Book Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Kara can be found on Twitter and Instagram at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Carrie can be found on Twitter and Instagram at CFOST Talks A Lot. That's the letter CFOST Talks A Lot.
Thanks for listening to Celebrity Book Club.